Well, welcome along to the Shortboard Rugby Pass podcast with Scotty and Mills. It's July 11. Producer Ellis also in the booth today. And on the Shortboard today, we're going to look ahead to the last round of Super Rugby regular season for 2018 and all the latest around the world of rugby union. Millsy, first of all, the Wales.
Wales.
Yes.
Wales. They've got a new Kiwi coach. Wayne the Pig Pivac is in the hot seat. Wowee.
Wayne the Pig Pivac.
Old Pig Pivac. He's got the job.
Oh, mate, he has. And well done to him. The Pig. Yeah, he was my first sort of professional coach, really, at Auckland. And the Pig is quite a striking name because I remember fondly when we were on a bus trip and the bus stopped for the leakage at the end of the...
For some leakage.
Yeah.
Not in the bus.
No, and we can't go down those, mate. But, as a 19-year-old, I decided that I'd call him Pig.
How'd that go?
Whoa.
Not good, mate. Not good.
Not good. You're not just calling me Pig, mate. You call me Coach. Wowie.
So you got to earn the right to use the nickname.
Yeah,
later. Well, that's fair enough. What about now? Would you be able to call him Pig now? Or are you still too scared? You've got that look on your face.
I'd like to think, I'd hope to think that I might have earned the right to hopefully call. I've never called him Pig. Pivac.
Wayne.
Yes, he's done well. I mean, I mean, some big, big contenders there. And he's done well.
Yeah, I mean, Dave Rennie was mooted as a contender for that job. And they were obviously on the hunt here, as we've read in the press this week, that they conducted a search pretty early. They wanted a Kiwi coach by the sounds of it. I guess Wayne's been up there with Scarlets, and he's done pretty well with Scarlets as well. And I know the Welsh are very parochial about their footy, and as Kiwis. I mean, I just don't know. Is it time for Wales to appoint a coach from within their own borders? Someone who has been blooded? Okay, I'll just get straight to the point. Is it time for a Welsh coach?
Well, a non-Kiwi coach. Who do you think? Well, they've had all Kiwi coaches, haven't they? Apart from Sean Edwards, who's in a caretaker role in the
pretty much, mate. Yeah, you've gone from Graham Henry to Steve Hansen and then Warren Gatland and now Wayne Pivac. Interesting to hear that there were some comments saying that Wayne was a better coach than either Steve Hansen or Graham Henry. And I guess we don't know the parameters around that particular point or the context to which that comment was made, but interesting that the chairman of the Wales Rugby has come out and passed on that comment.
Well, he said he was playing golf with a former All Black that had been coached by all men, all three men, and that was the passing comment. I can confirm now that it was
it
not
you?
Me.
Was it you?
It was not
you
me.
You said that.
It was in Wellington, apparently. I have been coached by the three of them, but I don't play golf.
No, you don't. I've seen you try and swing a golf club.
No good, eh?
Nah, it's average.
Because I'm used to, like, kilikiti.
Yes, you are. Okay, I know a lot's changed because he was coaching you 10 or more years ago. But what was he like as a coach? What kind of guy was he? Was he very strategic? Or was he quite old school in his approach? How did you find him as a coach?
I mean, I was 19. He was very, very old school. In terms of sort of the way he approached the game, very wore his heart on his sleeve, and he had a lot of good men around him. And so, when I say good men, I mean not just coaches, but also his leaders around there. I think Xavier Rush had just been announced captain of the Auckland team, and they were very successful. Then when Pivac came along, obviously a North Harbour man. And a former policeman as well, which is where he got his nickname from. But he was very well liked, and I presume that's what's happened over there in Wales. He's got a group of guys in the Scarlets team who won the final last year, went down this year against a very experienced Leinster side. So he's done extremely well to go over there and do that. But from my perspective, and he was actually a likable man.
Okay, conspiracy theory time. Dave Rennie left New Zealand, having had in his last year in charge of the Chiefs a fairly tumultuous experience, and which I'm pretty sure he didn't enjoy the way he perceived the issue at the Chiefs was dealt with by New Zealand rugby. So, he left for greener pastures, perhaps. Does Dave Rennie not getting this job mean that Dave Rennie is eyeing up the All Blacks job post-2019? And you've got Dave Rennie, Warren Gatland coming home, Joe Schmidt, who we don't know what his plans are or whether he's going to throw his name into the hat. But there is a wealth of wonderful coaches now available to New Zealand rugby. And you've got Ian Foster, who I'm sure will want to take the head job as well. So where does that leave New Zealand rugby post-2019 when you've got all of these great coaches around and they're available potentially?
With a hell of a big headache. I mean, a lot of people thought that, with Rennes going overseas and then obviously going for this job in Wales, that, you know, he'd have to be the most top contender for it. You know, he's obviously missed out. So where to for Rennes, I'm not too sure. And the names you just mentioned, I think that's the beauty about New Zealand rugby. We've got so many good coaches. Whoever's going to be in charge, obviously the board is going to have a massive say. I'm not too sure where Steve Hansen. Perhaps Steve Hansen takes another few more years, or he's definitely confirmed that he's no good after the Rugby World Cup.
Well, I mean, I think it's time. And also, you know, it worked to transition between Graham Henry and Steve Hansen. Does it necessarily mean that that's going to work again? And that's what concerns me. If this is a lay-down mazir and this is all going to be backroom dealt with, then I think we're missing out on some fresh blood in the mix.
Yeah.
And we should be thinking about the fact that this is the world's best rugby team and it needs the world's best coaches. And I know that there's this setup and there's this point of view, mainly from within, that you have to have that experience within the side before you can coach the side. Well, Joe Schmidt might argue with that, that he took an Irish team that wasn't great and has turned them into absolute champions and the second best ranked team in the world. I mean, does his coaching experience count for nothing? Does Warren Gatland's coaching experience count for nothing? Does a guy like Dave Rennie, who won back-to-back titles in his first two seasons in charge of the Chiefs and did a lot more in New Zealand rugby besides, does his experience count for nothing? I just think, we're going to start talking about this All Blacks situation. And now that we know that there's some contenders still available who may have got this job with Wales, this is going to be a massive conversation point. So what is the process from here? I hope it's going to be robust, and I hope they're going to attract the best candidates around the world.
Well, I hope it's going to be robust as well. I'm with you. Like, I don't think everything that those guys that you've named counts for nothing, because surely they are. I mean, any other day, if there was 10 other All Black teams, that easily fill the role. It's just, how are they going to go about it? How is New Zealand rugby going to sort of, I suppose, go about their ways in selecting a new coach post Steve Hansen? And who do you wean him out? I mean, does he stay on as a technical? Maybe they used to use technical advisors back in the day.
I wonder if that's part of the planning here. I mean, does Steve Hansen want to stay on in some director of rugby role? That's all very well and good for Steve Hansen, but that takes money out of the coaching pool.
Yeah.
And there's only a certain amount of money that New Zealand rugby has to pay coaches. If you're going to be operating in a sort of rugby tsar fashion, that's more money on top of the head coach, on top of the assistant coaches, and then you've still got to pay all your super rugby coaches under that as well. So, I'm sure that there's a lot of machinations to come and a lot of discussions to be had. But, I think if you had to sit down right now and put a list together of the candidates for that job, it's a lot broader than just those that have now operating within that All Blacks environment.
Yeah, you're right. And all fantastic men too. I've been, lucky enough to be coached by all of them. Joe Schmidt, at a very young age, he was assistant coach, very sound at what he did. Rennes, he just loved, he's kind of like a smithy, he sits down there, loves the tactical stuff, and almost at the stage where he was the headmaster and to try and, reassure him that you were right for the job, kind of thing. Yeah, going in every week saying...
It wasn't just the players who had to do that. You had to do that when you were reporting on the sidelines. You know what he'd do? Because he'd do this to the players. He'd do it to us as well. He'd come up to you and you go, what's going on this drill? What are we trying to achieve here?
Yeah.
And you're sitting going, I got no idea. And the problem is you don't want to look like you don't know anything, but by the same token, you don't want to be that guy who thinks he knows everything, because they'll see through that.
It was
an absolute punish going to Chiefs training.
Yeah.
And Smithy was the same. Smithy would do that to you all the time. In the end, I just went, I've got no idea. Tell me. Teach me, Master. Teach me, Yoda.
Perhaps that's what makes a good coach.
There you go.
Putting it back on you.
Speaking of good coaches, a couple in action this weekend, Millsy, as we head to the final round of Super Rugby's regular season. You're on the short ball with Mills Milliena, Scotty Stevenson, producer Alice in the booth today. I think we'll start with the game that counts for naught and should count for plenty, which is the Blues taking on the Crusaders. The Blues are out of there. They're no chance. They weren't a chance from about halfway through the season. So before we get to the game itself, Millsy, who are the Blues' marquee players that they're building a franchise around for next season and two seasons beyond? Because apparently things went to DEFCON 2 over the Ioane brothers once they got started shopping around. Mm. And so the Blues have obviously splashed a shit ton of cash on those two players. That's great. But what about the rest of your squad? Because if there's one thing this season has highlighted again for the Blues, they need some depth in their squad.
Massive depth. And it's always talked about, is that 10 role. And I thought that that's what they were looking at trying to achieve, you know, with having Gatlin and Perofeta, who's there. Obviously, Gatlin now has gone to the Highlanders. I mean, Otere Blacks is still around. You know, obviously being out with injury the whole time. But when you talk about the Ioane brothers, you know, they would have been throwing a bit of coin. And so, where does that? How much is left to share around trying to develop all these guys?
The graft's got to be there. Otere Black unproven still because we haven't seen him in action this season through injury. Stephen Perofeta, it's been a bit of a Frankensteinian project, yeah. That, as far as I'm concerned, I still see Stephen Perofeta as a fullback myself. And he's young enough to adjust into that first five role, yeah. But I thought he was rushed this year as a matter of circumstance because they obviously didn't trust Gatland. And that he was moving on anyway probably lessened his chances of playing. Yeah. And Oates couldn't play in the season. So, I mean, they've got issues around that. I mean, I look at a guy like Blake Gibson. I mean, that to me is a guy you can start building a franchise around.
Yeah, yeah.
And, gee, they missed him this year.
Yeah.
And I think we saw, certainly in his first game back, in that win at Eden Park, he's a beast.
He is.
And you've got to have those workers. But you need 12 of those guys in your team.
Yeah.
You really do. And Rico Ioane's fantastic. And Akita Ioane's numbers are undoubtable. But you need guys like a Blake Gibson.
Yeah.
You need it. So who are your second rowers next year? Because you're down to Matiaha Martin, who's a teacher from Bombay, who's in there in an emergency clause. And Jared Kelly Tuioti, suddenly the senior lock on your team. You're losing Jerome Kainor. Let's be honest, Jipper James Parsons is coming towards the end of his tenure. Mm. And he's been a great servant to that club. You've still got no midfield that's settled.
Nah.
So, I mean, there's problems all over the show.
Scrafton, how far he was out there. I mean, I know he's still relatively pretty young as well. You know, you got Dalton Papali'i that I think, and I think you name Blake Gibson. There it is. Blake Gibson, your Dalton Papali'is of the world. Obviously, Ioane at the back. Let's build the future around those three in particular. Well, and then you look at what else you've. I mean, that's the problem. You know, you now look. I mean, that's your Lucy's that you perhaps build your franchise around, but you need your midfielders as well. When you aren't settled in that department, and you know, obviously Sonny Bill's there. He's well and truly experienced, but you need three or four other guys because you know, as we've seen this year, you know, once he went down, they basically, I mean, they to bring Rico in there was massive.
Do you know, we've seen two teams this season, and I don't want to expand the conversation too soon, but we've seen two teams this season, one the Hurricanes with Jordy Barrett, and one the Blues with Rico Ioane, where because they've got injury concerns in midfield, they thought, well, they're still the better player to have on the park, let's put them in there. It doesn't work. I'm sorry, it does not work.
No, and you've seen in the weekend too, when you were shifted back there. I mean, bar a couple of passes, Jordy Barrett was pretty good, you know, and he just seems out of sorts, you know, putting him, I know he's the best player, but putting him in that centre, whereas Hewson, he was fantastic, wasn't he? I mean, he was probably the unsung hero at the whole lot. He just done his job and things like that, but when you're bringing, I mean, you know, guys out of position. And I just kind of wonder, I think, you know, bringing Rico Ioane in at second five. Yes, I know he scored that try. But you just, you need some stability then, and particularly in distribution. I mean, I know they've got a few injuries, but that's where you need that sort of solidity.
Always had a good midfield. All the great Blues sides did. And, you know, specialists playing in those positions too. I hope the Blues get it together. I mean, there's so much work to be done. I know they've got their last game this weekend against the Crusaders, which brings us neatly back to that match. The Crusaders had their awards night last night, as a few of the New Zealand teams did. Matt Todd, the Player of the Year for the Crusaders, Ethan Blackadder, the Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
He's been sensational. The Crusaders will approach this game the same way they approach every game. They love the momentum of the occasion. I mean, I can't see the Blues getting close if that was their best offering against the Canes last week. I cannot see it. And I know they'll want to send a few of their guys off on a high note, but Jerome Kainall's valedictory season is not the same as Wyatt Crockett's valedictory season.
No, and I mean, there was glimpses of some real heart shown by the Blues last week, but the Crusaders, I mean, they love these sort of moments. So there's no other team that, you know, when, you know, they play a team that's got, you know, nothing to lose, they're going to come down there. They don't shy off. I mean, their standards are so high, it's not funny. And the thing that amazes me is, well, they might go on with this one game plan and sort of get hit early, and they just change everything up and all of a sudden adapt to what's going on, and then just sort of shift to another gear. And that's why, you know, I'm with you. I don't think the Blues have a chance. But they can try and end their season off on a high.
Well, good luck to them. That's all I've got to say about that. So speaking of, you know, the Crusaders and the way they've developed their game plan, what about their set-piece strike play this season? And I think a lot of credit's got to go to Ronan O'Gara.
Yeah.
New to the coaching lineup, I believe he's got an oversight in that area, set-piece attack. They've scored a couple of rippers in the last few games off their line-out and scrum. And that's where the Hurricanes absolutely murdered the Blues last week. We know the Crusaders are going to have tricks up their sleeve. That try they scored after halftime, about 2 minutes into the break, where Crockett all floated to Todd, all floated to Makalia, all floated to Barrett. That is a freak show.
Yeah, and you say it, having O'Gara there, I mean, we're all, oh, okay, what's he actually going to bring? He's a skills coach, set-piece stuff, and... But you've got to get your set piece right first. So they've ticked that box of Jason Wright.
That's not a bad pack to be developing game plans off, let's be honest.
I mean, the Crusaders sides of the traditional Crusaders sides are like, okay, you go to set piece with these guys, or you know, go and try and up muscle them up front. They'll take you to school, and that's what they've usually done. Now they're bringing all these different elements. I mean, set piece. We were talking about in the beginning of the season how great the Highlanders were and when how that, you know, they manipulated certain things. Now, I mean, this Crusaders, how can they get any better? Can they absolutely get any better? Because there's nothing else they can't do.
Well, I think they can get better. But, you know, we spoke about the Blues and their depth today on the short ball. Let's talk about the Crusaders. You know, one thing I noticed last week doing the game down there against the Highlanders. It was before the game. I was standing on the sideline and chatting to Ethan Blackadder, Mitch Dunshay, Tim Perry, Tim Bateman, Mike Delaney, Jack Stratton, Braden Enor, Tom Sanders. I could go on.
Yeah.
Hamish Dalzell, Billy Harmon, Johnny Musselai. There's another team. There's another Super Rugby quality team standing on the sidelines, unavailable for selection. Luke Romano, another one, unavailable for selection or not selected. I mean, that is depth.
Bloody buggers.
Well, it's crazy, but it hasn't come about by accident.
Exactly, and that's what I was just about to say. Like, you, a year or so ago, you wouldn't even have those names that you've just listed off. They wouldn't have known. And now, all of a sudden, a year in, they are huge. That's a Super Rugby, another Super Rugby team.
Well, and here's the thing, right? This season alone, top qualifiers with a week to spare, they've made 16 debutants this year.
What?
And 10 of those have come through their academy.
Man.
I mean, you want to talk about a system that works. I mean, I can fix the Blues problem right away. I would go down there and say, can you just give us the blueprint for what you do? Because it's insane what they're doing down there. It is insane. As a rugby model,
yeah,
it ticks every box. And I'm just, I look at it as an objective observer, an outsider looking in. That place from top to bottom is shipshape. Unbelievably shipshape and aligned. Everyone aligned from the CEO right down to the bloke carrying the bags. And the funny thing is, the bloke carrying the bags, Foxy, is probably the most important guy on the team as far as the team's concerned because they love him.
Yeah.
If you can foster those sorts of friendships and that bonhomie in a team, you're going to go pretty deep every season.
Oh, massive. Massive. I mean, when you hit the nail on the head when the CEO, right, and that's, I suppose, been one of the dilemmas up here, is that not everyone's aligned. And but when you've got something like that where you know, it doesn't matter whether you're the CEO or the guy holding the bag, you know, or actually the gear man. Everyone's as important as whoever's at the top. And so, man, that's crazy. 16.
Yeah, 16 debutants in this season and your top qualifiers. Yeah, look, it's a staggering statistic. We move on, Millsy, though, this weekend. Also, the Highlanders taking on the Rebels. The Rebels' season on the line. They could be jettisoned out of the playoff mix altogether if the Sharks go and beat the Juarez during the weekend. So the Rebels, really, they've got one job, and that's win this game.
Yeah.
And I cannot see them doing it. Although, I've got some genuine fears for the Highlanders because we've been discussing it during the week, Millsy. One, their kicking game is not as sharp as it was before June, and two, we've talked about the fatigue syndrome, and I think it's, you can't deny it at the moment, that team is tired, they're slipping off tackles that 5 weeks ago they were making.
Yeah, and that June, it seemed like that June sort of break didn't really sort of freshen them up as well, but I mean, you look at the way they play, and you've spoken about it many times, you know, the physicality that they bring, and they're right, there's no denying it, there's no denying the fact that some of these big guys have had big numbers, huge numbers in terms of physicality, defence. You know, it's starting to sort of show, and they'll have glimpses of brilliance, but you can see that fatigue factor starting to settle in on them. And so,
top three tacklers in the comp, all Highlanders. Five of the top 10 Highlanders.
Yeah,
and you're making 150 of them a weekend. The 42 missed tackles against the Chiefs was the absolute nadir for that defensive system, and they improved against the Crusaders. Yeah. May I add, I don't count them out because you can't count a team like that out because they're mongrels and you've got to love them.
Yeah,
and they've long been everyone's second favourite team. They just need a statement game here. They need something against the Rebels to say, boys, we're on a plane tomorrow somewhere, whether that be Sydney or Johannesburg. We're on a plane somewhere. Let's throw it out here. Last game at home. Let's go into the playoffs with something resembling our normal selves.
Yeah, and you kind of, a lot of the players also say it's not just the games that are physical, it's also their training. So you wonder whether the coaching staff have sort of said, well, let's back off and freshen these guys up. And you're right, they need a statement game to actually give them some confidence. I think they played well against the Crusaders. They're a different beast, but I think, you know, let's have another, let's back that up again against, especially against the Rebels, which I think they will win. But to win well and win with confidence before they hop on that plane will be massive for them.
I can't believe the Rebels bottled it last week.
I know.
I mean, you got one job, beat the Reds.
Yeah.
And you bottled it. And I could talk about a lot of teams in the same breath here. And of course, we've also got the Chiefs playing on Friday night against the Hurricanes. With no Damien McKenzie. Now, okay, I'm just, I know you're looking at me funny, so let me say it. You need an All Black rest week in the last round of Super Rugby? No, you don't. No, you don't.
Is he the only one?
No, you don't.
Is he the only one being rested?
I don't care. It is ludicrous. They put 20-odd points on the Highlanders, right? A playoff team. And the Highlanders are only two positions back from the Hurricanes.
Yeah.
And home advantage is potentially on the line here. Oh. And you're going to rest your number 10? I am sorry. That is when you stand up and go, you know what? I know we had a deal, but more importantly, my franchise wants a home quarter final. We are not the All Blacks. Oh. It's Super Rugby. I am sorry. No. So the fans dip out. So your franchise and the owners of your franchise don't get to reap any benefits from potentially hosting a quarterfinal. So you run the white flag in your final regular season game when you know you're going to be playing that team again the week after. I'm sorry. This makes zero sense. And I'm sure there's plenty of smarter people out there than I who will argue the point, but no.
Yeah.
No.
Get on that ball, mate.
It undermines, as if, it undermines the integrity of the competition. Super Rugby is Super Rugby. Yes, I know the All Blacks are a big deal. Don't get me wrong. I wish them all the best. I know they've got extra pressures on them from a playing point of view, but come on, man.
And this could have huge, huge ramifications on the Chiefs. You know, a home final, a home quarter.
I know it's a long shot. This could have been decided last week, by the way. They could have put themselves in a much better position than this week with a bonus point victory over the Brums and a few more points on the board and not leaking tries late in the game. But it's there.
Yeah.
23 points. That's what you need in a bonus. And it's a team that's, funnily enough, capable of it.
They are.
With the return of Brodie Retallick and Damian McKenzie playing 10 and your best players on the park. You're capable of it. I mean, we're not talking about a Hurricanes team that has really hit their straps again since three straight losses.
Mate.
You're an ex-Chief. This must infuriate you.
Well, it does. And the way you brought it up doesn't really help.
Yeah, I'm fired up. I want a contest. I want a game. I'm here for Super Rugby, man. That's what's on the menu right now.
Oh.
I'm not here for next week's menu. I'm here for this week's menu.
Oh. So you're saying... Oh.
So walking into a restaurant and saying, sorry, mate, we've only got the rib special next week. I know we advertised it earlier in the month, but now it's only next week. No, I want the ribs now. I want the ribs. I want the full kg of ribs. I want to be rubbing my belly in agony in half an hour's time.
You're not going to get those ribs, mate.
I'm not getting the ribs. I want the ribs.
You ain't getting no ribs.
We've gone from ribs, and now we're serving what? A ham steak.
No, flaps. Mutton flaps.
Mutton flaps. I don't want no mutton flaps.
Now these days, don't they?
I don't want the mutton flaps. Mutton flaps are not good for you. You know, unless you're in a boiler. Now, the Hurricanes. Let's switch tact here. Just three changes they've made. Throwing out a full-strength team. They got 24 points to play with. Why do they need a full-strength team?
They need to build on what happened last week, leading into the finals.
Mm. That's right, Millsy.
That's what they need to do.
That's right, Millsy.
Yeah.
Yeah, they need some momentum going into the quarterfinals. I want to ask you one question about the Hurricanes. Wes Wilson at 13.
Mm.
Have they found their answer?
I think they have.
Yes.
I absolutely think they have. He was... Like I said before, he was the unsung hero. I know, yes, Lomape was devastating, and that's what they need to do. I don't care whether you keep giving it to him 100 times, there's still a brick wall there. You keep giving it to the man.
Give it to Ngani. Didn't we talk about this last week?
Yeah, yeah.
Was he listening?
You said it, man. You said what? He did two runs, and they were both from exits. And he carried guys like 20-odd metres.
I spoke to Chris Boyd after the game. And we were talking about Ngani's performance. Four tries, just a beast. I mean, obviously ripped them to shreds. But he said, you know, last week, Ngani Laumapi was the guy most disappointed with his game against the Brumbies in that loss. He was the guy who came in the most upset about how he had played. That's how you make a statement.
Oh, mate.
Right there.
Sucks.
So that battle against Charlie Ngātai, at least we've got that to look forward to on Friday night. Charlie Ngātai v Ngani Laumapi. Oh, my God.
Wow.
There are going to be craters left on that field.
Oh,
craters.
Man. That's a huge matchup.
Isn't it?
Huge. Well, yes, Lomapi he showed how explosive and how strong he was. But the other thing that impressed me as well was how the Hurricanes set it all up. You know, the guys running off the ball and things like that to give him that sort of weak shoulder and things. So they'll need to do that again against the Chiefs because, you know, they'll be pretty smart, especially with...
Yeah.
Ngātai there, right?
Yeah.
Who's playing 10? Have they named that side?
Marty McKenzie will play 10.
McKenzie.
Yeah. Big Marty. Lost a bit of hair, Marty. Must be tough watching your little brother take that jersey. Must be real tough. I'm lucky I'm the youngest of two brothers.
Oh.
It's more painful for me watching my brother earn millions of dollars. But now here's the other thing. We're going to round up the podcast today. The Jaguares.
Yosh.
Who... Let's be honest.
Are they top at the moment?
No, they're not.
Oh.
But they could be top this weekend if they beat the Sharks and the Bulls beat the Lions. So of those two eventualities, which one do you put most stock in? The Jaguares beating the Sharks, who are still, by the way, a chance to make the playoffs and knock the Rebels out.
Okay.
So the Jaguares beating the Sharks at Kings Park with the Sharks season on the line and the Jaguares guaranteed a playoff spot already. Oh. Or the Bulls beating the Lions with the Lions looking for top spot. And know that if they don't get it, they're going to have to be travelling. Because if the Jaguares beat the Sharks, then the Lions are going to be like sixth or seventh.
Yeah. Wow.
Why don't we just settle this on the second Sunday of September with a sack race?
Well, I don't know.
Come on, Millsy, you've got to give me something. The Jaguares to beat the Sharks or the Bulls to beat the Lions? Or the Lions to beat the Bulls or the Sharks to beat the Jaguares?
Okay, well, I think the Sharks will beat... They'll beat the
Sharks. Will beat the Jaguares.
Yeah, and I think,
Careful, your boy Mitch is coaching the Bulls, mate.
Yeah, the Bulls. I think the Bulls have got something. There's something there.
No, you're not.
I do. I know. I think there's something there.
You're thinking the Bulls are going to upset the Lions.
Where's that game? Is that Pretoria?
Don't ask me the hard questions. It's in South Africa. That much I know. It's all altitude there.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
I mean, that's a massive game. No, I think the Bulls, I think they can do it. I think they should.
I'm just treating you with a stony face silence here. You want to change your mind? You want to phone a friend? Alice?
The Lions are going to win.
Correct.
Yeah. That's my prediction.
And Sharks, Jaguares?
Sharks.
Yep. I'm with Alice here. I think the Sharks get in the playoffs and knock out the Rebels. I think the Rebels get stuffed by the Highlanders. The Sharks get in the playoffs. The Brumbies don't do enough to get into the playoffs because the Waratahs will beat them. They'll secure a second spot on the table. The Lions, I think they'll get third. And then we're all on.
Oh, mate.
Fourth and fifth, the Chiefs and the Chiefs and the Hurricanes. And then the Highlanders.
Well, who's the Crusaders, Scott?
The Crusaders will play the Sharks. And melt them in Christchurch.
Crusaders going to take it out anyway.
You think that already? Don't count your chickens before you hatch. I'm just before the quarterfinal.
I was just thinking that out loud.
Finally, on the short ball today, Millsy, let's bring some sanity back to this. I know that everyone thinks that this is the Crusaders' title to lose. You've been in title races. You've been in Super Rugby. You've played a lot of games. There is no such thing as a guarantee. Am I right or am I right?
You're damn right. All right.
So, with that noted, which team, apart from the Crusaders, has the most chance of going through and winning Super Rugby 2018?
Oh!
Given that it's likely that the home advantages will rest with
New Zealand teams?
Well, certainly with the Crusaders, and then possibly with the Hurricanes, and possibly with the Lions, and then the Waratahs if the Crusaders were to get knocked out. So,
you know, the dark horses?
Mm-hmm.
I reckon the Waratahs.
I agree with you.
Do you?
Something is going on
there. Is, eh?
Something is brewing. Something is brewing because they were decidedly shithouse to start the year.
Mate.
But their key players are starting to ball.
Yeah. And even I looked at Foley. Does Foley put on a bit of beef?
I don't know. Foley's put on a bit of beef.
He's running in some good cut apart from that bounce. But
I think he's still recovering from that hit put on him by Offa Tunga Fasi last year, actually. Hasn't been able to breathe properly since.
I'd be still recovering from that.
I would give up. I would never play again.
The Waratahs, mate. There's something going on there, Sumo.
This is a rarity on the short ball. Two Kiwis giving Australians praise. And that has been it for another week. Enjoy the last round of Super Rugby. Lots to talk about. And we'll be back next week when we know who the quarterfinalists will be and in what order. Gee, I can't wait for that. My mental calculator's drained. Catch all the action this week on rugbypass.com.